Hi, this is Mrs. English. I will be reading today from Homer's Odyssey, the Odyssey of Homer from the Richmond Lattimore translation. And I am reading from Book 3. In Book 3, Telemachus, the son of Odysseus, is going to visit Pylos, and we have quite a few references to the worship of Poseidon and sacrificing to Poseidon. And just as an interesting archaeological note, they have found some Linear B tablets. Linear A is the one that's never been translated, but they have found some Linear B tablets at Pylos that indicate that Poseidon was kind of their patron god. He was especially worshipped at Pylos. That's kind of interesting, just as a side note. Beginning Book 3, Line 1. Helios, leaving behind the lovely standing waters, rose up into the brazen sky to shine upon the immortals, and also on mortal men across the grain-giving farmland. So the sun rose. They came to Pylos, Neleus's strong-founded citadel, and of course Nestor is a son of Neleus, where the people on the shore of the sea were making sacrifice of bulls, who were all black, to the dark-haired earthshaker, Poseidon. There were 9 settlements of them, and in each 500 holdings, and from each of these 9 bulls were provided. Now, as these tasted the entrails and burned for the god, the thigh bones, line 10, these others put straight in, and on the balanced ship took off the sails and stowed them, and moored her in, and themselves landed. So Telemachus arrives. Telemachus stepped out of the ship, but Athena went first, and it was the gray-eyed goddess Athena who first spoke to him. Telemachus, here is no more need at all of modesty. Line 15. For this is why you sailed on the open sea, to find news of your father, what soil covers him, what fate he has met with. So come now, go straight up to Nestor, breaker of horses, for we know what intelligence is hidden inside him. You yourself must entreat him to speak the whole truth to you. He will not tell you any falsehood. He is too thoughtful. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to her in answer, Mentor, how shall I go up to him? How close with him? I have no experience in close discourse. There is embarrassment for a young man who must question his elder. So Telemachus is at a loss of words. He's afraid. Line 25. Then in turn the gray-eyed goddess Athena answered him, Telemachus, some of it you yourself will see in your own heart, and some the divinity will put in your mind. I do not think you could have been born and reared without the god's will. So spoke Pallas Athena, and she led the way swiftly, and the man followed behind her, walking in the god's footsteps. They came to where the men of Pylos were gathered in session, where Nestor was sitting with his sons, and companions about him were arranging the feast, and roasting the meat, and spitting more portions, putting them on the spit, the thing you turn around over the fire. These men, when they sighted the strangers, all came down together, line 35, and gave them greeting with their hands, and offered them places. First, Pisistratus, son of Nestor, came close up to them and took them both by the hands, and seated them at the feasting on soft rugs of fleece there on the sand of the seashore, next to his brother Thrasymedes, and next to his father. Notice that Nestor's son practiced an excellent xenia. They don't say, who are you, who goes there? They say, come sit down. Line 40. He gave them portions of the vitals, and poured wine for them in a golden cup, and spoke a word to both of them, pledging Pallas Athena, who is daughter of Zeus of the Aegis, my guest, make your prayer now to the Lord Poseidon, for his is the festival you have come to on your arrival. But when you have poured to him and prayed, according to custom, then give this man also a cup of the sweet wine, so that he too can pour, for I think he also will make his prayer to the immortals. All men need the gods. So he means both of them, Telemachus and Mentor Athena. But this one is a younger man than you, and of the same age as I am. This is why I am first giving you the golden goblet. So he spoke, and put in her hand the cup of sweet wine. So Mentor Athena looks older, and so Nestor's son, practicing a proper xenia, serves the elder guest first. So he spoke, and put into her hand the cup of sweet wine, and Athena was happy at the thoughtfulness of a just man, because it was to her he first gave the golden goblet. Immediately she made her prayer to the Lord Poseidon, line 55. Hear us, Poseidon, who circle the earth, and do not begrudge us the accomplishment of all these actions for which we pray you. First of all, to Nestor and to his sons grant glory, Kleos, and then on all the rest of the Pylians, besides confer gracious recompense in return for this grand hecatomb, and yet again grant that Telemachus and I go back with that business done for which we came this way in our black ship. She spoke in prayer, but herself was bringing it all to completion. Next she gave Telemachus the fine two-handled goblet, and the dear son of Odysseus prayed in the way that she had. So Athena prays first, and Telemachus learns how. Line 65. When they had roasted and taken off the spits, the outer meats, dividing shares, they held their communal high feast. But when they had put aside their desire for eating and drinking, first to speak was the Tyrrhenian horseman, Nestor. And now is a better time to interrogate our guests and ask them who they are now they have had the pleasure of eating. Strangers, who are you? And this is Nestor speaking. From where do you come sailing over the watery ways? Is it on some business, or are you recklessly roving as pirates do when they sail on the salt sea and venture their lives as they wander, bringing evil to alien people? Line 75. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, taking courage, for Athena herself had put that courage in his heart so that he might ask after his absent father, O Nestor, Neleus' son, great glory of the Achaeans, you ask us where we come from. Therefore I will tell you, we come from Ithaca, under the mountain Neaon. This is a private matter, no public business of which I tell you. I follow the wide fame of my father, on the chance of hearing of the great patient-hearted Odysseus, the man, they say, once fought beside you, and helped sack the city of the Trojans, for we have been told about all the other men who once fought the Trojans, how each one of them perished in sad destruction. But the son of Cronos has made this man's death one that none knows. There is no man who can plainly tell us when he perished, whether he was killed on the mainland by men embattled, or on the open sea in the billows of Amphitrite. And of course Amphitrite is Poseidon's wife. Line 91. That is why I come to your knees now. And so Telemachus is supplicating, metaphorically at least, Nestor for information. That is why I come to your knees now, in case you might wish to tell me of his dismal destruction, whether you saw it, perhaps with your own eyes, or heard the tale from another who wandered too. His mother bore this man to be wretched. Do not soften it, because you pity me and are sorry for me, but fairly tell me all that your eyes have witnessed. I implore you, if ever noble Odysseus, my father, ever undertook any word or work, and fulfilled it for you, line 100, in the land of the Trojans, where you Achaeans suffered, tell me these things from your memory, and tell me the whole truth. In turn, Nestor, the Gerenian horseman, answered him, Dear friend, since you remind me of sorrows which in that country we endured, we sons of the Achaeans, valiant forever, line 105, or all we endured in our ships on the misty face of the water, cruising after plunder wherever Achilles led us, or all we endured about the great city of the Lord Priam fighting, and all who were our best were killed in that place. There lies Aias, a man of battles. There lies Achilles. There lies Patroclus, line 110. These all died at Troy. But one who was like the gods for counsel. And there lies my own beloved son, both strong and stately, Antilochus, surpassingly swift to run, and a fighter. And many besides these were the evils we suffered. What man who was one of the mortal people could ever tell the whole of it? Not if you were to sit beside me 5 years and 6 years and ask me about the evils the great Achaeans endured there. Sooner you would be tired of it and go back to your country. For 9 years we fabricated evils against them, trying them with every kind of stratagem, and at last the son of Cronos finished it. Then there was no man who wanted to be set up for cunning against great Odysseus. No one wanted to compare themselves to Odysseus then. He far surpassed them in every kind of stratagem. Your father, if truly you are his son, and wonder seizes me when I look on you. Oh, my goodness, Nestor to Telemachus, you look like him. Wonder seizes me when I look on you, for surely your words are like his words. Nor would anyone ever have thought that a younger man could speak so like him. For while I and the great Odysseus were there together, we never spoke against one another, Neither in council nor assembly, but forever, one in mind and in thoughtful planning, we worked out how things would go best for the Argives. And so Nestor says, your father and I, Odysseus and Nestor, always worked together. Line 130. But after we had sacked the sheer citadel of Priam, and were going away in our ships, and the gods scattered the Achaeans, then Zeus in his mind devised a sorry homecoming for the Argives, since not all were considered considerate nor righteous. Therefore many of them found a bad way home, because of the ruinous anger of the gray-eyed one, whose father is mighty. So who is angry at their impiety? It is Athena. They were oud dikaioi. They were not righteous. Line 136. It was she who made a quarrel between the two sons of Atreus. When these two called all the Achaeans into assembly wildly, and in no kind of order, as the sun was setting, and the sons of the Achaeans came in heavy with drinking wine, these two spoke forth. It was why they assembled the people. At this time Menelaus was urging all the Achaeans to think upon going home over the sea's wide ridges, but this did not please Agamemnon at all. He wished rather to hold the people there and accomplish holy hecatombs, and so as to soften Athena's deadly anger. Line 145. Poor fool, who had no thought in his mind that she would not listen to him. The will of the everlasting gods is not turned suddenly. So these two, after making exchange with hard words, stood up to go, and the rest of the strong, grieved Achaeans rushed out with inhuman clamor, and two opposed counsels pleased them. That night we slept there, pondering in our minds hard thoughts against each other. Zeus was contriving pain of hardship. At dawn, some of us hauled our ships down into the divine sea, and loaded our possessions aboard, and the deep-girdled women. But half the people were held back because they remained there with Agamemnon. Remember, at this council, when they all came inebriated, they all came drunk, Agamemnon and Menelaus disagreed. Agamemnon wanted to stay there and accomplish a holy hecatomb, make a sacrifice for all the bad things he had done at Troy, and Menelaus wanted to just get home. So line 155. But half the people were held back because they remained there with Agamemnon, Atreus' son, shepherd of the people. We, the other half, went aboard and drove on. So Nestor went with Menelaus. And the ships went very fast, as a god flattened the sea full of monsters. We came to Tenedos and made sacrifice to the immortals. We were straining homeward, but Zeus, hard-hearted, was not yet devising homecoming for us, but again inspired yet another quarrel. Then some, who followed the Lord Odysseus, the wise and resourceful, turned about, and boarding once more their oar-swept vessels, went back, bringing comfort to Atreus' son Agamemnon. So part of them went with Menelaus, left Troy, and they went to Tenedos and made some sacrifices, and they were going to go off home, but again they had an argument, and Odysseus, he and his men, go back. Line 165. But I, with all the ships that followed, pulled together, fled away, for I saw how the god was devising evils, and the warlike son of Tydeus, this is Diomedes, fled and urged his companions on. And, late, fair-haired Menelaus came to join us and caught us at Lesbos as we pondered our long sea voyage, whether we should sail over the top of rocky Chios by the island Cyrus, keeping it on our left hand, or else to pass under Chios by windy Mimas. We asked the god to give us some portent for a sign, and the god gave us one and told us to cut across the middle main sea of Euboea, and so most quickly escape the hovering evil. A whistling wind rose up and began to blow, and the ships ran very fast across those ways full of fish, and at night time brought us in at Gerastus. We sacrificed many thigh bones of bulls to Poseidon, having measured the great open water. It was the fourth day, line 180, when the companions of Diomedes, breaker of horses, Tydeus' son, made fast their balanced ships at Argos. I held on for Pylos, guess Nestor's king of Pylos, and never once did the wind fail, once the god had set it to blowing. So, dear child, I came back without news, and I knew nothing of those other Achaeans which had survived, which ones had perished. Line 185. But all I've got by hearsay, sitting here in my palace, this you shall know. It is right you should. I will not conceal it. They say that the Myrmidons, Those furious spearmen, led by the glorious son of the great-hearted Achilles, made a good voyage, and Philoctetes, Poeas's shining son, had fair sailing, and Idomeneus brought back to Crete all of his companions who had escaped from the fighting. The sea took none of these men. You yourselves, though you live apart, have heard of Atreides, how he came home, and how Aegisthus, Atreides, Agamemnon's cousin, devised his wretched death. But Aegisthus, too, paid for it in a dismal fashion. Line 195. So it is good, when a man has perished, to have a son left after him, since this one took vengeance on his father's killer, the treacherous Aegisthus, who cut down his glorious father. So you too, dear friend, for I see you are tall and splendid. Be brave, too, so that men unborn may speak well of you. So you'll have good kleos, a good reputation. Be brave. Line 200. Now, what did Nestor just tell Telemachus is very important. He just compared Telemachus to Orestes again. Good that your dad has a son in case he needs to be avenged. Line 201. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, O Nestor, son of Neleus, great glory of the Achaeans, it is all too true that he took revenge, and so the Achaeans will carry his glory far and wide, a theme for the singers to come. If only the gods would give me such strength as he has to take revenge on the suitors for their overbearing oppression. They force their way upon me and recklessly plot against me. No, the gods have spun out no such strand of prosperity for me and my father. Now we must even have to endure it. Line 210. Then in turn, Nestor the Gerenian horseman answered him, Dear friend, since you have spoken about these things and reminded me, they do say that many suitors, for the sake of your mother, are in your palace against your will, and plot evil against you. Nestor saying to Telemachus, Oh, well, I have heard those rumors. Tell me, are you willingly put down, or are the people who live about you swayed by some divine voice and hate you? Line 214 and 215, Nestor might as well say to Telemachus, Are you a wuss? Do you willingly let them do this to you, or do you have some god that hates you? Line 216, Who knows whether he will come some day and punish the violence of these people, either by himself or all the Achaeans with him? If only gray-eyed Athena would deign to love you, as in those days she used so to take care of glorious Odysseus in the Trojan country, where we Achaeans suffered miseries. Line 220. And of course this is ironic. If only Athena would love you like she loved your father Odysseus, because who is standing right next to Telemachus? Line 221. For I never saw the gods showing such open affection as Pallas Athena, the way she stood beside him openly, beside Odysseus. If she would deign to love you as she did him and care for you in her heart, then some of those people might well forget about marrying. Line 225. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, Old sir, I think that what you have said will not be accomplished. What you mean is too big. It bewilders me. That which I hope for could never happen to me, not even if the gods will so willed it. So Telemachus thinks, That would just be too good to be true. Now in turn, the gray-eyed goddess Athena spoke to him. Telemachus, line 230, what sort of word escaped your teeth's barrier? Lightly a god, if he wishes, can save a man, even from far off. Okay, what? I can't believe you said that. That's what it means. What sort of word escaped your teeth's barrier? I can't believe you said that, that it is too good to be true that Athena would take care of a Telemachus like she would of Odysseus. Line 232. I myself would rather first have gone through many hardships and then come home and look upon my day of returning than come home and be killed at my own hearth as Agamemnon was killed by the treacherous plot of his wife and by Aegisthus. So Athena is trying to make excuses for all the years that she has done nothing for Odysseus and says, you know, it is better to come home late than to come home and be early and be murdered. Line 236. But death is a thing that comes to all alike. Not even the gods can fend it away from a man they love when once the destructive doom of leveling death has fastened upon him. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to her in answer, line 240, Mentor, though we sorrow, let us speak no more of these things. His homecoming is no longer a real thing. But already the immortal gods must have contrived his death and black doom. But now I would find out about another story, and question Nestor, since the righteousness and thought in his mind outpass others, and they say he has been lord over 3 generations of men. He shapes an immortal for me to look upon. He shapes as an immortal for me to look upon. So Nestor looks so good, and Telemachus has heard he has been the lord, the king there, or prince, for 3 generations, and he looks fine. He looks immortal. 247. O Nestor, son of Neleus, tell me the true story. How did Atreus's son, wide-ruling Agamemnon, die? And where was Menelaus? What scheme of death did treacherous Aegisthus, the cousin of Agamemnon, what did he have to kill one far better than he was? Was Menelaus out of Achaia and Argos, wandering elsewhere among men, that Aegisthus had courage to do it? So how could Agamemnon's cousin, Aegisthus, have the courage to kill Agamemnon? Wasn't Menelaus, Agamemnon's brother, wasn't he nearby? Then in turn, Nestor the Gerenian horseman answered, So, my child, I will relate to you the whole story. Line 255. All would have happened just in the way you yourself have seen it, if Atreus' son, fair-haired Menelaus, on his homecoming from Troy, had found Aegisthus still alive in his palace. Yes, that's true. It would have happened just like that. Menelaus would have killed Aegisthus if Aegisthus had still been alive. Even after his death, none would have heaped any earth upon him. They would not have made him a funeral barrel. But he would have lain in the field outside the city, and the dogs and birds, line 260, would have feasted on him. Nor would any Achaean woman have wailed over him. That was a monstrous plot he accomplished. For we were sitting out there, and accomplishing many hard tasks, while he, at ease, deep in the corner of horse pasturing Argos, kept talking to Agamemnon's wife and trying to charm her. So Nestor says, while we were at war, Aegisthus was there, wooing Agamemnon's wife. Line 265. Now in time before, beautiful Clytemnestra would not consent to the act of shame, for her own nature was honest. And also a man was there, a singer, whom Agamemnon, when he went to Troy, had given many instructions to keep watch on his wife. But when the doom of the gods had entangled her, so that she must submit, Aegisthus took the singer and left him on a desert island for the birds of prey to spoil and feed on, and took her back to his house, and she was willing as he was. Then, on the sacred altars of the gods, he burned many thigh bones and hung up many dedications, gold and things woven, for having accomplished this monstrous thing he never had hoped for. Now, we sailed back on our way from Troy together, Atreus' son, Menelaus, and I, with friendly thoughts toward each other. But when we came to holy Sunion, the Cape of Athens, there Phoebus Apollo, with a visitation of his painless arrows, killed the steersman of Menelaus, the one who held in his hands the steering oar of the running ship. This was Phrontis, Onitor's son, who surpassed all the breed of mortals in the steering of a ship whenever storm winds were blowing. So Menelaus, though straining for the journey, was detained there to bury his companion and give him due rites. Line 285. But when he, too, had gone out of the wine blue, on the wine blue open water in his hollow ships, and made his run as far as the steep rock of Melia, then Zeus of the wide brows devised that his journey should be hateful, and poured out upon him the blast of shrilling winds, and waves that bulged and grew monstrous like mountains. There he cut the fleet into 2 parts, and drove some on to Crete, where the Cydonians live around the streams of the Ardanus. There's a sheer of a cliff, a steep rock out in the water at the other end of Gortes on the mist face of the main, where the south wind piles up a huge surf on the left of the Rockhorn toward Phaestus, and a little stone holds out the big water. As an archaeological site side note, this mention of Phaestus, which is on the island of Crete, here in Book 3, line 296, the Phaestus disc is the famous Linear A writing. It's in a circular writing that has never been translated. You can look that up in your glossary. It was there they came, and by lively work the men avoided destruction. But the waves smashed their ships on the splinters of rock. But the wind and the water, catching up the other five dark proud ships, bore them along and drove them on Egypt. So Menelaus, line 301, gathered much gold and livelihood in those parts, sailed with his ships to men of alien language, and all the while at home Aegisthus worked out his grim plans. So when Agamemnon got home, Menelaus was not there to revenge him or take care of him or protect him, because Menelaus had gotten blown off to Egypt. 7 years he lived as lord over golden Mycenae, and this is Mycenae. Aegisthus served as lord 7 years at Mycenae, where Agamemnon was king. After he killed Atreides, line 305, with the people subject beneath him, but in the eighth the evil came on him. Great Orestes came home from Athens, and he killed his father's murderer, the treacherous Aegisthus, who had killed his glorious father. When he had killed, he ordered among the Argives a grave mound for his mother, who was hateful and unwarlike Aegisthus. And on the same day Menelaus of the great war cry sailed in, bringing back many possessions, the burden his ships carried. So, dear friend, do not you stay long and far wandering away from home, leaving your possessions, and in your house men so overbearing, for fear they divide up all your property and eat it away, so all your journey will have no profit. And so Nestor ends here with a little word of advice to Telemachus. So don't stay too long away from home and leave the things you own and leave in your house terrible men like that. And yet I do encourage you and urge you to visit Menelaus, for he is newly come from abroad, and people who live where no man's mind would ever have hope of returning, once the storm winds had blundered him off his course and into an open sea that is so great that not the birds even cross it by their own strength, it is so big and terrible. But go to him now, with your ship and your companions, or, if you wish to go by land, here are horses and chariot, and here are my own sons at your service, who will be your escorts into shining Lake Daemon, line 325, the home of fair-haired Menelaus. You yourself must entreat him to speak the whole truth to you. He will not tell you any falsehood. He is too thoughtful. So he spoke, and the sun went down, and the darkness came over. Line 330. And now the gray-eyed goddess Athena spoke forth before them. Old sir, all that you have said was fair and orderly. But come now, cut out the tongues of the victims, and mix the wine bowls, so that when we have poured an offering to Poseidon and the other immortals, we can think about sleep. It is that time. For now the light has gone into darkness, nor is it becoming to sit about at the feast of the gods, but better to go home. So she spoke, the daughter of Zeus, and they listened to her. The heralds poured water over their hands to wash with, and the young men filled the mixing bowls with wine for their drinking, and passed to all, line 340. After they had offered a drink in the goblets, they threw the tongues in the fire and stood up and made a libation. It must be that Poseidon prefers tongues of bull. But when they had poured and drunk each as much as he wanted, then Athena and godlike Telemachus started up together to go away to their hollow vessel. But Nestor detained them where they were and made a speech to them. May Zeus and all the other immortals beside forfend that you in my domain should go back to your fast ship as from some man altogether poor and without clothing. And so he says, oh my goodness, may Zeus defend you. May Zeus avenge you. If you went back to your ship now, like you were leaving from some poor person and without clothing, who has not any abundance of blankets and rugs in his household for his guests, right, Zanina, or for himself to sleep in soft comfort, okay? Heaven forbid, we would say in modern English, heaven forbid if I let you go back to your ship to take off without giving you food, clothing, gifts, and things like that. No, no, line 352, but I do have an abundance of fine rugs and blankets. No, no, in my house the dear son of Odysseus shall not have to go to sleep on the deck of a ship. As long as I'm alive and my sons after me are left in my palace to entertain our guests, whoever comes to my household. Then in turn, the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, said to him, this was well said by you, dear old sir. It is fitting that Telemachus should obey you, since it is much better that way. He shall go along with you now, so that he can sleep in your palace, but I shall be going down to my black ship, so that I can encourage my companions and tell them everything." The listener can notice here that Athena is teaching Telemachus manners as they go. She doesn't even wait for Telemachus to speak. She is teaching Telemachus what the proper thing to do is, and in the next occasion that we see the same type of circumstances, Telemachus is able to act on his own. Line 3, 6, 2. "For I'm the only man among them who can call myself an elder. The rest, all of an age with the great-hearted Telemachus, are younger men who out of love for him went along. There I will lie down beside the black ship now, but at dawn shall make for the great-hearted Caconies, where a debt owed me has been piling up. It is not a new thing, nor a small one. You, since this young man has come to your household, give him conveyance with your son by chariot, and give him those horses that are best for strength and the lightest runners." So Athena, before she goes back to the ship, says, "Give him a chariot, let him go over land." 371. So speaking, gray-eyed Athena went away in the likeness of a vulture, and amazement seized on all the Achaeans, and the old man was amazed at what his eyes saw. He took Telemachus by the hand and spoke a word to him, and named him, "Dear friend, I have no thought that you will turn out mean and common, right? Mean, common, and cowardly, if, when you are so young, the gods go with you and guide you thus. Here was no other of those who have their homes on Olympus, but the very daughter of Zeus, most honored Tritigenia, who always among the Argives favored your noble father." Line 380. "So now, O queen, be gracious and grant me good reputation, for myself and for my children also, and for my grave wife. And I will sacrifice you a yearling cow with wide forehead unbroken. No man has ever led under the yoke yet. I will gild both her horns with gold and offer her to you." Here is Nestor praying immediately, thanking Athena, the queen, for her graciousness and asking for good reputation. Line 380. What's good reputation? Good kleos. For he and his wife, and now he's going to sacrifice a cow with a big wide forehead, unbroken. This means it has not been a work cow. Apparently this makes it more special. And what's he going to do to the horns? He's going to gild them, which means they'll be gold-plated horns. And then he'll kill it and put it in the fire as a sacrifice. Line 385. "So he spoke in prayer, and Pallas Athena heard him. Now the Geranian horseman Nestor led the way for his sons and his sons-in-law back to his splendid dwelling. But after they had reached the glorious dwelling of the king, they took their places in order on chairs and along the benches. And as they came in, the old man mixed the wine bowl for them with wine sweet to drink, which the housekeeper had opened in its 11th year, and loosed the sealing upon it. The old man mixed the wine in the bowl and prayed much, pouring a libation out to Athena, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis." Line 395. "When they had poured and drunk, each man as much as he wanted, they went away, each one, to sleep in his own dwelling. But Nestor, the Geranian horseman, gave Telemachus, the dear son of godlike Odysseus, a place to sleep upon a corded bedstead in the echoing portico." Line 400. "Next him was Pisistratus of the strong ash spear, leader of men, who of his sons in the palace was still a bachelor." And so he is sleeping on the porch with one of Nestor's sons, who's still a bachelor. "But Nestor himself slept in the inner room of the high house, and at his side the lady his wife served as bedfellow. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, when the sun rose," line 405, "then Nestor the Geranian horseman rose up from his bed and went outside and took his seat upon the polished stones which were there in place for him in front of the towering doorway, white stones with a shine on them that glistened. On these, before him, Neleus, a counselor like the gods, had held his sessions, but he had been beaten down by his doom and gone down to Hades' house. And now Geranian Nestor, the Achaeans' watcher, sat there holding his staff, and his sons, coming out of their chambers, gathered in a cluster about him. Echephron and Stratios, Perseus and Eretus, and Thrasymedes the godlike, and sixth was the hero Pisistratus, who came to join them." Line 415. They brought out godlike Telemachus and seated him next to them, and Nestor, the Geranian horseman, began speaking to them. "Act quickly now, dear children, and do me this favor, so that I may propitiate first of all the gods, Athena, who came plainly to me at our happy feasting in the gods' honor. Come then, let one man go to the field for a cow, so that she may come with all speed, and let one of the oxherds be driving her, and one go down to the black ship of great-hearted Telemachus, and bring back all his companions, leaving only two beside her, and yet another go tell the worker in gold Laerces to come, so that he can cover the cow's horns with gold." So he is accomplishing his vow. "You others stay here all together in a group, but tell the serving women who are in the house to prepare a glorious dinner, and set chairs and firewood in readiness, and fetch bright water." Line 430. So he spoke, and they all bustled about. Now the cow came in from the field, and the companions of great-hearted Telemachus came from beside their fast black ship. And the smith came, holding in his hands the tools for forging bronze, his handicraft's symbols, the anvil and the sledgehammer and the well-wrought pinchers, with which he used to work the gold. And Athena also came to be at her rights. Now Nestor, the aged horseman, gave the smith the gold, and he gilded the cow's horns with it carefully, so the god might take pleasure seeing her offering. Stratius and the noble Echephron led the cow by the horns, line 440, and Aretas came from the inner chamber carrying lustral water in a flowered bowl, and in the other hand scattering barley in a basket. Steadfast Thrasymedes stood by with the sharp axe in his hand to strike down the heifer. So he does the killing. Notice that all of Nestor's sons are pious and practice proper Xenia. Each one of Nestor's sons that is still alive is listed easily helping his father. They know all the rites. They do exactly as they're told. Perseus held the dish for the blood, and the aged horseman Nestor began with the water and barley, making long prayers to Athena in dedication, and threw the head hairs into the fire. Now when all had made prayer and flung down the scattering barley, Thrasymedes, the high-hearted son of Nestor, standing close up, struck. And the axe chopped its way through the tendons of the neck, line 450, unstrung the strength of the cow, and now the daughters and daughters-in-law of Nestor, and his grave wife Eurydice, eldest of the daughters of Clymenus, raised the outcry. They lifted the cow from earth of the wide ways, and held her fast in place, and Pisistratus, leader of men, slaughtered her. Line 455. Now when the black blood had run out, and the spirit went from the bones, they divided her into parts, and cut out the thigh bones all according to due order, and wrapped them in fat, making a double fold, and laid shreds of flesh upon them. The old man burned these on the cleft sticks, and poured the gleaming wine over, while the young men with forks in their hands stood about him. But when they had burned the thigh pieces and tasted the vitals, they cut all the remainder into pieces and spitted them, and roasted all carefully, and took off the pieces. Yes, after they make the sacrifice, and they wrap the thigh bones all in the fat and everything, basically they offer to the god everything that you would not want to eat, and then they roast the rest of it and have a feast in celebration, and there's quite a long story behind that. Line 464. Meanwhile, lovely Polycaste, who was the youngest of the daughters of Nestor, son of Neleus, had bathed Telemachus. But when she had bathed him and anointed him sleekly with olive oil, she threw a splendid mantle and a tunic about him, and he came out from the bath looking like an immortal, and came and sat down beside Nestor, shepherd of the people. Line 470. When they had roasted and taken off the spits, the outer meats, they dined where they were sitting, and men of quality started up and poured them wine in the golden goblets. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, Nestor the Geranian horseman began speaking to them. Line 475. "Come now, my children, harness the bright-maned horses under the yoke for Telemachus so that he can get on with his journey." So he spoke, and they listened well to him and obeyed him, and quickly they harnessed the fast horses under the chariot, and the woman who was housekeeper put bread and wine in, and meats such as kings whom the gods love feed on. And Telemachus stepped up into the fair-wrought chariot, and by him Pisistratus, leader of men, the son of Nestor, went up into the chariot, and in his hands took the reins and whipped the horses to run, and they winged their way unreluctant into the plain and left behind the sheer city of Pylos. line 486. All day long they shook the yoke they wore on their shoulders, and the sun set, and all the journeying ways were darkened. They came to Pherae and reached the house of Diocles, who was son of Ortilochus, whom Alpheus once had childed. There they slept the night, and he gave them hospitality. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, they yoked the horses again and mounted the chariots, bright with bronze, and drove them out the front door and the echoing portico, and he whipped them into a run, and they winged their way unreluctant. Line 495. They came into the plain full of wheat, and by that way made good their journey as the fast horses took this byway, and the sun set, and all the journeying ways were darkened. It was night, and that is the end of book 3.